Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Baby on the Brain, The Returners, a podcast brought to you by Stylist, dedicated to the big life questions you face when you're a new parent navigating a return to work. My name is Fliss, I'm the Digital Content Director at Stylist, and I returned to work last year after a 10-month break on maternity leave. Every week I'm joined by a different co-host, and today I'd like to introduce Toby Asare. Toby is a board member, author, speaker, founder of My Bump Pay, an online platform to help women smash the glass ceiling with a baby on the way and beyond. And she's a mum of two. Alongside all those accolades, she found time to write a book, with her debut, The Blend, being a guide to navigating a successful career whilst raising a family. Together, we're here today to talk about the financial impact mothers face when they are making decisions about whether or not to return to work. Toby, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. It is such a pleasure to have you as my co-host. I wanted to start by talking to you about your experience of returning to work and ask about any financial considerations you made.
I mean, finances are such a big driver in terms of the decision to start a family and to grow a family. So much of a driver for me that I actually started My Bump Pay, hence the name. My Bump Pay, it was actually linked to money because at the time, kind of going into my pregnancy, we didn't really have kind of much of a policy around finances other than statutory, which I knew was going to be a challenge. So I kind of raised the topic and conversation of, you know, possibly getting that changed and instituted within the organization I was working for at the time, which was successful, which is wonderful. But that just kind of got me thinking about all the different financial considerations somebody goes into when they're having a baby. So that led me on this journey to create lots of different tools that I have on my website, such as the maternity leave calculator and how much does it cost to have a baby. So pulling all these spreadsheets together for myself made me feel like, wow, you know, if I need this, lots of other, you know, people and individuals going on this journey definitely need this. So it's been at the forefront of my journey and also kind of calculating how long I can afford to be on maternity leave for, as well as lots of other considerations.
Gosh, when I went on mat leave, I sat on the sofa and watched Girls and you created My Bump Pay. So I take my hat off to you. I did nothing of the sort. You're obviously very driven and I respect that.
Oh, thank you.
I think there are so many facets to money that we could talk about. And it's from, actually, when I was doing research for this episode, I was on TikTok and I went on some forums. And the thing that struck me was how often women, when they find out they're pregnant, start to worry about money instantly. Yeah. And I know that's the time and place we're in. It's 2023. In the UK, we're in the midst of a financial crisis. Mortgage rates are increasing, interest rates are going through the roof. You know, bills are more expensive than ever. You go to the supermarket and it's hard not to spend £40 just on top-up shops. So if you factor into that people who can't breastfeed, who are trying to afford formula milk, like, gosh, there are so many different things we could talk about. But I think for me, the emotional impact of finances and money is just so vast. And I know in The Blend you touch on this, but what would you say to someone who was worried about money and is pregnant and is listening to this?
I would say there's always a solution. And it's actually, I think, really important to focus and identify that emotional aspect. I know the guest that we're going to bring on, you know, knows lots about that. But I think actually acknowledging that there will be a bit of an emotional shift in how you connect with money at the beginning is really important. So it just kind of doesn't just hit you by surprise, but also kind of you can plan it. And sometimes sitting down to plan it can feel really scary and really daunting. But I think sometimes just taking it month by month, but also realizing there may be a positive aspect to money whilst on maternity leave, although that might seem impossible. But things like, you might not be spending so much on travel, for example, so you can take that saving and put it towards something else. So there is a real power in actually sitting down, as daunting as it may feel, but there is a real power in actually sitting down and actually facing and having that conversation and facing, okay, right, what does this mean for my or our collective finances? So I would say, as hard as it is, like, really try and kind of get into the nitty-gritty of your finances. And there are so many amazing apps these days that can kind of gamify it and make it more fun, so it doesn't have to feel like as boring as possibly a spreadsheet.
That is so interesting to me, because my husband actually made us do this. So the nice thing for me, and I realize I'm privileged to be in a relationship where we were both being very equal partners in bringing up our daughter. But as soon as I found out I was pregnant and we spoke about it, I said, I'm really worried about money.
Yeah.
And he did a spreadsheet, which was horrendous, I must say, because he did, in the nice way, not in a controlling way, he asked me to download my bank statements for the last year.
Oh, geez.
So he could pivot table everything.
Scary.
And I was like, I was spending so much money on ASOS, I cannot even fathom. I have nothing to show for it. But he was like, he managed to dissect everything and then made down to the amount of money we would be spending on petrol each month. Mm. He wrote down everything. You know, this is what we've got allotted for water. This is what we've got allotted for petrol. This is what we've got allotted for misc expenses. And it's not sexy.
No,
in any way. At all. But it did help me. Every now and then when I could feel the panic rising in me, I went back to that and I thought, right, okay, at least it's a visual and I can see it. And I can see where I've overspent in one thing. And that made me feel a bit better, because I knew it was kind of cause and effect for me. I'm a very visual person. So yeah. I think you're right, definitely, in that sense. It's just hard. You see, it is a hard time. And I think we have to acknowledge that. It's a hard time today and as a pregnant person.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so hard. And we were talking a little bit about that emotional change, right? Of, you know, all of a sudden you kind of go from earning money, and then depending on your package, of your organization's package, that change in your salary and your income might change quite drastically as well. And so you go from possibly being quite financially independent to maybe being financially dependent, but also having a huge responsibility for another life, plus all the hormones that are kind of gushing around and all the different things that you've kind of got to adjust to. It's a big change, but I do believe that, you know, conversations like this are so important, because it makes people feel less alone, but also makes people feel like they do have options and solutions and can have the conversation.
Yeah. So in my NCT group, I know I've spoken about this a lot. And for me, I think the bigger conversations about money, we all kind of acknowledged we wouldn't have a lot of money on mat leave. Mm. Actually, it was when I went back to work and I had to factor in a new commute because I'd moved cities and my train fare went through the roof. When I returned to work, that was the time when the most open conversations happened about money, and not just money, but wages, salaries, pay rises, what you're worth, how to ask for what you're worth. I don't know if you have experience of this as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think that kind of coming back from maternity leave, like, we all know it and we all feel it. Like, our confidence takes a bit of a dip, and we do definitely have to remind ourselves of, you know what, actually I am the business. I was doing really well in my job before I took this, I'm going to call it a power pause, because in some ways it's not a break. There are so many different things that continue on this journey, so I really had to remind myself, like, almost write myself a letter of all the things that I'm actually really good at, and use that as a bit of a boost to, I guess, my journey is a little bit interesting. Eventually, I actually made the decision to change sectors and get a new job. But I really had to talk myself into, like, right, Toby, yes, you absolutely can do it. And it took a few brutal interviews. And, you know, talking to different people about, it's hard, but talking to different people about what the salary, market salary is for that job that I was looking to enter into, gave me the confidence to have those conversations, or at least apply to those jobs that paid at that particular level, but also knowing what I needed to run my home and my lifestyle and to feed my children and put clothes on their back. It's fundamentally really important. There's a stat that I've shared with our expert before, and I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but if women don't actually negotiate over their whole period of their lifetime, so that could be from anything to pensions, to buying a house, to buying a car, to negotiating your salary, we can lose from, I believe it's £800,000 to over £1 million over our whole entire lifetime. It's such a powerful statistic that we should have imprinted in our brains that any opportunity there is to ask or have a conversation about money and negotiate, I would just run for it, because there's money left on the table every single day by us as women. And obviously, I think, you know, other people do the same as well, but we need to get our confidence back. We need to realize that maternity leave is that power pause, and our skills continue to develop in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
And we haven't lost the success capital that we've got. It does continue. And therefore, you know, if you've got great stellar performance, there is a right time and place and strategies that hopefully we can discuss that help people to have those conversations. But it's hard.
It is hard. And I think when, in my experience, when I came back from mat leave, I was tired. I was so tired. And I had this new commute and I was pretending not to be tired. And I was trying to be the person that I was before, when I was such a wildly different human being, with like getting up at 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. and all sorts of other mad things. So the idea of having a conversation about money, I would have run away from that. There is no way I would have ever tackled that, because I couldn't have even tackled the commute, let alone a hardened conversation about something that made me feel awkward as a very British person, just cowering in the corner. What I did want to just briefly touch on is the women who are returning to work, actually the conversations about going part-time and how we change what that sounds like out loud, because so many women do return in a capacity that is less than full-time. And I just think it's really interesting to talk about out loud and say that doesn't mean that you are worth any less. And actually, in terms of your finances, I think we have to be really open and communicate the impact that that will have in the long run. So I was really, really lucky, and I'm ever so grateful to Anna Whitehouse and all of the people who have campaigned for flexible working, because I asked to go from 5 days to four. Now, until I did that, until I submitted that form, I had never thought about the long-term impact that would have on my career, until someone thankfully said, you do know this will impact your pension. And I just thought, it's just never, it's never been part of my psyche. It's never been something that I've thought about. And I wonder if many other people are in that same boat.
Yeah, pensions is that really unsexy but so important topic, isn't it? Like, no one wants to really think about growing old, but we are living a little bit longer. And you're right, I think it's really incumbent on us to have these conversations, talk about, right, if you are going to work a little bit more flexibly, what does that really look like for your financials? Not just the pay that kind of hits your bank account, but everything else in terms of like your financial status, in terms of possibly applying for a mortgage and all these other things that are dependent on how much, you know, money is then therefore coming in. But there is a really good book that I love. I talk about it a lot, but it's called Smart Women Finish Rich. And actually, it is based on the idea of using pensions as a vehicle to create your own wealth as a woman, because we live longer and actually we're more likely to have caring responsibilities for obviously younger babies, but also potentially older relatives in later life. So pensions is one of those really important topics. And there's as well as obviously our amazing expert, who is fantastic, the FT do a lot of writing actually on this particular topic in terms of pensions and getting women really comfortable about pensions. And there's another book, sorry, I could talk about pensions for a long time, which is relatively strange. There is another book called Love Is Not Enough, which also kind of touches upon that from a female perspective. So there's so many amazing resources out there that we can definitely tap into.
Definitely. I think the interesting thing for me is I love the sound of those books. It's frustrating that you have to seek it out.
Yeah, definitely.
It should just be handed to you. Yeah. Like, so there should be something that's given to you. Like, right, you're a woman who works and you look like you're coming back from maternity leave. Here are all of your options and all of the impacts that these options might have on the next 10 years of your life. I don't know. It just, maybe that's my bump pay. That comes in?
Or rain check, which I'm sure we're going to introduce. But yeah, you're right. When you asked me that question, I was like, hang on, shouldn't we be supplying this information when people are applying for flexible working? It's like, great. Here are all the considerations that you want to kind of really sit and think about long and hard and make sure that it really is genuinely the right decision for you, because it might maybe that, okay, now you know that you're going to work flexibly for the next 5 years while your children are under school age, and then maybe, you know, flex it after that. So so right, there is a bit of, well, not a bit, there's a huge chunk of information that's missing along with this big decision.
Yeah, what I'm hearing from our conversation now is that money is complicated and there are so many different parts to it that almost make me want to just bury my head in the sand, to be honest. And I'm sure that is the opinion of many other people, not you or our guest. But I think for many women, it's overwhelming. It's really overwhelming. Yeah. So I'm grateful for you being here today to help me break that down. And I think it's probably a good time that we introduced our guest.
Let's
do it. We've mentioned her a couple of times now, and I'm keen to get her voice in on this. So I would like to introduce Davinia Tomlinson. She is the founder of Raincheck, a financial education platform for women and girls, and a mother of two. She started Raincheck in 2018 after 15 years working in investment management. During her time in the industry, she became frustrated with both the poor representation of women in senior management positions and low engagement of women in general when it came to their finances, which I feel like I may have just played into. Davinia, hello. Thank you so much for coming on today. You've been listening to Toby and I talk about our experiences of motherhood and finances. Do you think what we've spoken about is common for mothers in the UK today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so hi to you both. Thank you for having me. I mean, I think there are a couple of things here. When I think about the Rainmaker community, and actually, you know, when we think about what Raincheck is offering, it's broader than just financial education. And that really was led by the community, because we offer qualified and regulated financial advice as well as financial coaching, for the very reason that women are so disengaged with their finances. And of course, it's not all women, but the vast majority of women that I certainly come into contact with through the work that I do at Raincheck tell me, and we're talking about very smart, ambitious women that are just smashing it in all of these different, you know, career paths. You know, I've got doctors, dentists, accountants, creatives, freelancers, people that are working full-time, people that are working part-time. And the one thing that is common among them all is this feeling that money is something to be fearful of. Their relationships with money are, you know, that they're something that they're working on. And of course, it's a great thing that they are part of the Rainmaker community. So they recognize that there is a gap in some instances in their knowledge. For some, they have a very specific objective. I mean, I think about, you know, the many, you know, the different life cycle stages that women go through. You know, there's the point at which you leave home, perhaps after university, maybe you move in with a partner, you know, getting married, having a baby, for some of us getting divorced. All of these things have an impact on our finances. And what you see is the pinch points at each of these different stages really impacting us beyond just the financial costs. You know, I talk all the time about the broader costs associated with our well-being. One of the things that Raincheck has always sought to do is to really help women to recognize the importance of our financial well-being on all other aspects of our wellness. And I think maternity leave is a really perfect example. It's this kind of, you know, it's the perfect storm, really, where you've got, you know, the emotional consequences, you've got this physiological changes that are happening within your body, as Toby's already mentioned. You've got all of these hormones, you know, rushing around your body. You're thinking about your finances, you're thinking about how to preserve your relationship in lots of cases, because we know that that changes as well. You know, how do I interact with this person? My body has changed. Nothing really has happened to my partner in lots of cases, you know, certainly biologically.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that you bond over, isn't it, in NCT groups. So if you meet a mom in the park, you're thinking, oh gosh, nothing's really happened, particularly if you've got a male partner, nothing has really changed for them. And so against that backdrop, thinking about your finances, it's easy for that to really just fall by the wayside. Now, whether you're a mom or not, I think as women, you know, we are socialized, at least in the Western world, to believe that, you know, any conversation around money is not necessarily for us. We are trained to believe that it's quite a vulgar conversation. You know, nice women don't talk about money. Or for those women, you know, I certainly, having worked in the city and worked in finance, that the very few women that I was exposed to in a senior leadership position, they had terrible reputations. You know, there are very few of them that I think, you know, were viewed, you know, as nice, you know, and I think that's one of those things, you know, we are socialized to believe that as women, we have to be nice. And so, you know, you are conditioned to believe that for a woman to ask about money and to assert herself around the boardroom table and to have a voice, she has to develop this hard edge. And I'm sure Toby in particular, you know, given some of the work that you do and some of the boardrooms that you enter into, I'm sure you share, you know, lots of those experiences. And things have changed quite a lot, you know, certainly over the course of my 20-year career and the experiences that I've had. But I think all of these things combine to create the conditions for women to feel like, you know what, already I don't feel that confident in this particular arena. Society and everyone else are telling me that I shouldn't be talking about it anyway. So I'm just going to accept what I'm given and I'm just going to be silent. And maybe I'll discuss it among my friends. But, you know, how many of us are actually discussing money with our friends?
Yeah.
So there are all of these things that I think create quite a challenging situation for lots of us as women. And, you know, we're talking about the UK, we're talking about the West, but I think these situations exist all around the world.
Absolutely. And it's so important that you talk about kind of not really confronting our financial position and society not necessarily like encouraging women to kind of really face it up front. And I always think about my daughter and how much would I want for her to have the ability and the confidence to be able to tackle some of these conversations. And but it's so important. Again, I always kind of go back to this book of Smart Women Finish Rich, because they talk about all the financial documentation that you may have in your household. Like, how many of you have really sat down to read it? Do you understand what your insurance policies say, and how much do they pay out, and when do they pay out? And if you are statistically more likely to outlive, let's say if you have a male partner, statistically more likely to outlive your male partner, what happens when you do outlive them, and how do you access that money, and do you have enough money? There's just so much. It sounds really scary, doesn't it?
But yeah,
I think it's again so important to have this conversation. That you're so right. And then the whole emotional side, I mean, where do we begin? That's a whole nother podcast, right?
Yeah, right.
I think it is. I mean, you make an excellent point, Toby. I mean, I read an article fairly recently, and I think these articles are recycled over time, but I read an article about some elderly women and the experiences that they had, you know, outliving their husbands and having no idea where any of the documentation was, because their husbands, you know, the very traditional marriages had always taken care of that. You know, that these women, their primary work was within the home.
Yeah.
And so they'd built these amazing homes and families, and their children have now grown up, and it was the two of, you know, them and their husbands. But then their husbands pass away and they have no idea. And what it does is to leave them in already a really fraught and emotionally charged time, even more vulnerable than they would otherwise need to be. So yeah, it's so important that we have these conversations, and especially as younger women, when we're entering into conversations. I mean, one of the things that we've been working on at Raincheck is this guide to relationships and money, and saying, you know, what are some of the red flags to look out for when you start dating someone? You know, what's the point at which you should raise the topic of money? And again, you know, we're thinking as women, oh gosh, I don't want to raise it because I want to be viewed as a gold digger. But actually, these are the red flags. These are the green flags. And this is how to approach these conversations. I think it's really important, as well as then when we become moms, you know, again, you're thinking about your daughter. I have two daughters, and they were certainly in the forefront of my mind when I was writing Cash's Queen and thinking, what do I really want the next generation of young women to be able to know about money? What do we want them to be able to do? What do we want? What kind of economic empowerment do we want them to have? Mm. And so, we, you know, I share very clearly the principles to money management. And we're talking for girls as young as the age of 11, you know, getting them to understand why money is so important and why it's a catalyst for them in achieving some of the things that they want to achieve and having these healthy, you know, positive lives, I think is really important.
Can I ask you, I've read a lot around this topic as someone who returned to work last year, and I keep seeing the phrase the motherhood tax, and I'm not entirely sure I know what that means. Could you explain it to me?
Yeah, so I think, and I've seen it referred to as motherhood penalty, motherhood tax. Yes. Either way, it's such an awful way. You think to yourself, I'm bringing a new life into the world, and you're so excited as soon as you see pregnant. For the vast majority of us, as soon as you see pregnant on the, you know, on Clear Blue, you're like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing. You know, I've been trying, let's celebrate. And then you've got the secrecy around, you know, when can I tell people?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you don't necessarily think through. I think, you know, as you've already highlighted, there is a certain moment of truth, isn't there, where suddenly you think, oh, hang on a second, how is this going to impact me financially? I haven't really considered that, you know, when I I'm going to have this baby, but how can I work and manage childcare in the midst of a prevailing childcare crisis where it's not even just about the escalating cost of childcare, but there's also about the dearth of places in terms of, you know, where can you get your child into to a, you know, a nursery place? So that's a challenge as well. And what we see is that that burden is disproportionately borne by women. Right. Even in those households and even in those relationships where you have relative parity, if not through income, but certainly in terms of, you know, your responsibility for child rearing, for picking up children. You know, lots of us anecdotally, I'm sure, as moms can attest to how horrified we are when anyone would ever say, oh, is your husband babysitting tonight? And you're like, babysitting his own child. That's not a thing. So, you know, but we recognize that, you know, even if it's, you know, through, you know, anecdotal, these kind of throwaway comments that people make when you return to work, the automatic assumption is that you as the woman will be responsible for, you know, you get into work and you're immediately, this is why they say, and Toby will know this, this is why they say working moms are the most efficient people on the planet, because you know you've only got this finite period of time. You've got to get out of the office to get to make your train. You've got 10 minutes to get from the train to the nursery. And so the motherhood penalty in the midst of all of that chaos is effectively, typically refers to the economic gap, that financial gap that women confront when they return to work after maternity leave. Typically, we return to work part-time or we return to work, you know, later than we might otherwise have planned. So as a minimum, you know, in the UK, it's quite generous in terms of maternity conditions. And so, you know, that, you know, you'll get some kind of, you know, however minimal, you will get some kind of financing. The problem is that financing is unlikely to keep you in the lifestyle to which you'd become accustomed prior to going on maternity leave. And so then you're dependent on your workplace to offer more enhanced maternity pay. But then when you return to work, if you're not returning full time, and lots of us struggle to do that for some of the reasons that we've given, you know, as well as the fact that, you know, your body hasn't properly adjusted to the fact that you've brought, you know, this, you brought forth this life. Mentally, you haven't necessarily adjusted.
Oh, yeah.
And so the idea of baby brain and things like this, you know, I always balk or I kind of cringe when I hear baby brain, because I think it's not baby brain, it's just chronic fatigue.
Yeah.
Right? And so as women, you know, you are confronted by the fact that, oh my gosh, well, I want to go back to work part time because I'd really like to spend this time. My baby's just a year old when I'm returning to work. I don't want to be away from him or her for that length of time. And so I'm going to go back 3 days a week. I'm going to go back 4 days a week. But then what happens in terms of your pension contributions? What is that, the impact of that in terms of your salary over your lifetime? There's a lot of data and statistics that point to the fact that it's millions of pounds that we then effectively think about the impact of compounding over time that we lose out on. And of course, there is an opportunity cost. The upside is that you get to spend time with your child in those early development years. But certainly that motherhood penalty really points to the economic impact. And we know that women are already clobbered with a multitude of financial inequalities anyway. And so it's so important that we're able to be mindful of what that impact might look like and how we can attempt to mitigate it.
Your use of the word clobbered has absolutely thrown me. Just, I'm in awe. Sorry, Toby, you talk.
No, I was just thinking what you kind of saying, being aware of the penalty or the impact and kind of being clobbered. And it's so important, right? So that we can hopefully go into it having different layers of decisions that we might want to make, being empowered, knowing of the various different things that could potentially impact us. But that all takes, you know, someone like us, like sitting down and really confronting it and then trying to have that conversation. Like, I remember having that conversation with my then boss about, you know, the maternity pay and being really nervous to kind of approach it and then being really nervous to follow up because I really needed this extra money. I was like, when is it going to land? Is it actually going to happen? So how do we have these conversations around money?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think, and you're quite right, it's important that until such time as we're in a situation where it's recognized the role that women play in not just giving birth to literally the next generation of workers that are propping up the welfare state and making those national insurance contributions that are supporting the economy and supporting the growth, supporting the lifeblood of the economy in terms of generating the next tranche of workers, until such time as that is recognized and we're having those conversations up front at work and elsewhere, then we have to seek that information out. So I think it's really important that we are We support one another. We uplift and empower one another. And that might be if you are somebody that's in the workplace in a leadership position or not, but you've already been through certain experiences, we've got to share that information with people that are coming through the door behind us. So I think there's something about paying it forward, absolutely, and making sure that we're saying, right, to the next generation, if you have someone in your team who confides in you, that, you know, I'd like to start a family, or I'm pregnant, that you can have those conversations. I think it's incumbent upon us to do that. You know, quite often there are women's networks at work, parenting networks at work, inviting men into the conversation as well. So when I talk about parenting networks, you know, I've done lots of work with, you know, not just women's networks, but parenting networks in big organizations. And I always love to have men in the audience when I'm discussing some of these issues. I don't shy away from the hard topics because men need to understand so that when they go home to their female partners, they can say, my God, I had no idea it was really like that. Because why would they know necessarily unless we proactively tell them? So I think inviting them to be part of the solution, recognizing that we can't do it alone. So for example, you know, you might be unaware, you know, listeners might be unaware that, for example, their partners can contribute towards their pension, you know, on their behalf. And so rather than you losing all of those contributions when you're on maternity leave or returning to work part time, they can make those contributions on your behalf. And there is a certain tax efficiency that comes from that. That's really important. And again, it's not something even I was aware of when I went on maternity leave.
Or parents or grandparents can also do the same as well.
Twice.
Wow.
Right. So that's really important. Making sure that they are part of the conversation is really key.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Then I think there is something about as women recognizing, and I loved what you said, Toby, about writing down before you went back to work. You know, you were very active in it, because I just kind of drifted back into work after maternity leave. I knew that I didn't want to stay at home full time. And I know that for other women, they make other, you know, a different choice. And we have to feel empowered in that choice. I think that's really important as well, to surround yourself with people who support you in your choice. We have to support our own decisions and get on our own team. But at the same time, we need to be surrounded by people that are not going to speak disparagingly about our choices if they differ from theirs, and will help us to see what's positive about the decisions that we've taken. But, you know, writing down, these are all of the things that I was doing before. These are all of my strengths. And actually, I've acquired some new strengths over the course of this period that I've been on mat leave. You know, as I said, working moms are an incredible group. I mean, that show on Netflix, I love it. There's a reason why, you know, working moms is a thing, and why it would be a show. And the reason why hashtag working moms is a thing, because we are like efficiency machines. We don't have time.
Do you know, I couldn't watch that show at first. I found it so triggering. I've never said this in public. I found it so triggering. I would just cry watching that show. Yeah. I was like, it's so realistic of the struggles and the challenges. And actually, I can't watch it. So I haven't revisited it, but I know it's amazing.
I bet now you've come through that tricky time.
Yeah, I could probably watch it now.
You'll watch it and you'll go, yeah, but I completely hear you, because it depicts so accurately all of these different roles. I bet, you know, we watch it and you think, oh, I know that woman from NCT, or I know, you know, the perfect mom, the yummy mom. She's always looks amazing. She pinged back to a size 10 straight away, you know, all of these sorts of things.
Who is that person?
Right. And but I do think, you know, so surrounding yourself with the right people, but also reminding ourselves of who we are. And so it's about investing in that mindset. So this is not about kind of, when I say this, I recognize that there are lots of people that are into this. So I do not say this to criticize them, but manifesting things without actually putting any action into it doesn't work, in my opinion. I feel like it's a fail. I know, shame.
Oh, shame. There's no easy way out.
It's a shame. There's no. It's just not a thing. Sitting and thinking. No, sitting and thinking is great, and getting your mind attuned to what you want to deliver is wonderful. But it's so important that we remind ourselves of what we have practically delivered, what value have we delivered, and then going into the workplace and using that as evidence. This is not just us saying, oh, because I'm a woman, I want to be treated better or differently. No, it's because I am Toby, Fliss, Dav, I've done all of these amazing things, and I will continue to do these amazing things and be even more efficient for you. And this is what I've already delivered. We have to remind ourselves of that. And if it requires you to journal it, write it down, write a letter to yourself, as Toby said, which is a beautiful thing, do that. Absolutely.
Raising a child and staying in work is a real balancing act. But raising a child with special educational needs and staying in work can feel like enough to tip you over the edge. I'm Lisa Miller, journalist and mother to a daughter with a rare genetic syndrome. I'd like to invite you to the Sen Mums Career Club, a new podcast where each episode I speak to a different guest who has their own unique journey navigating a career alongside special needs parenting. We discuss the triumphs, tribulations, and things we've learned along the way. Listen to the Sen Mums Career Club from DC Thompson, available on all your major podcasting platforms.
As part of the motherhood tax, I suppose, it's not directly connected to money. It's not directly about money, but it's connected to money. The lack of opportunity that comes up if you do go down to 3-4 days a week for a lot of women. Now, this isn't everyone, but it anecdotally, what I've heard is that if you come back after mat leave, maybe you've just come back from your first mat leave, actually. I think that's quite a big thing as well. Often you're not put forward for promotions and you really have to fight for it. And I think Toby's idea, like you said, Dav, of writing down your strengths and really believing in yourself. I mean, it's shit, isn't it? That the only way you're going to get through this is by believing in yourself. Mm. Like, no one else is going to back you. Yeah. That's rubbish. Yes. Like, that's the last thing you want when you're at a real huge point of change in your life. Like, the most mammoth change I've ever been through is going back to work after maternity leave. And if the only person that's going to back you is you, that's really hard to hear, but maybe that's the truth everyone needs. And, you know, if you're going to have to put yourself forward for the promotions, then you should have the be empowered to do that. I get that. I think it'll be hard for a lot of women. I think it's really hard.
It's hard. I talk about having a sponsor, which I think is really important before you go on maternity leave. So even before you've packed your maternity bag or anything like that, you need to have a sponsor, or you need to seek out somebody who is going to advocate for you when you are not there.
Is that someone at work?
Someone at work who knows how amazing you are and has the position in your organization to be able to influence decisions, typically around money and opportunities, who can actually say on your behalf, right, Fliss is off on mat leave, but I know she's roughly coming back in about 2 months. She's actually expressed she would love this type of opportunity. Here are all the three reasons why she's perfect for it. And I'm throwing her name in her hat and I really back her to deliver on those opportunities. It sounds like a really hard thing to do, but I always impress on women, you know, write down those goals. Share those goals with somebody with a position of influence. Share the evidence of you being able to deliver those things as well. And you're doing the work for them, that all they have to do is effectively buy into that, believe you, and hopefully have enough influence to say something really positive. And if that change or that opportunity doesn't come your way, at least you've had a great profile building opportunity even whilst you're not there. So you're right, we are the people that can best advocate for ourselves, but also we can help other people advocate for us when we are maternity leave. And that goes throughout our whole careers as women and as people who may choose to take power pauses, aka more maternity leaves. I think it's so essential, but it kind of comes into the point around kind of money as well, and kind of using those tactics to help us talk about money and kind of negotiate salaries and things like that.
So to both of you then, obviously, you guys are doing an incredible job of opening the floor to talk about money more openly. But there are going to be things that you guys see and you must want to scream because people aren't talking about it. So we're talking a little bit more about pensions, but what are we not talking about that you think needs to be front and center for women who are going to be returning to work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think One of the things that I see, certainly within the Rainmaker community, is when you are getting your salary, when you are being paid, it's just general kind of money management. So this is not, you know, your pension is something that, and I think pensions probably need a bit of an image overhaul anyway, because yes. as Toby said, they are so unsexy.
Yes. Let's give them a rebrand.
Yeah, I think Toby's doing that. She's at yeah, the forefront of that one.
We need it. But I do think that we can be quite passive about our pension planning, particularly if you are employed by an organisation, because you think, well, it's just being deducted from my salary anyway. We're not necessarily checking what's happening. So I think there's something that we can be doing about our broader money management. And for me, that's kind of looking at our cash flow, being more strategic with some of our financial decisions. So we're not just going to work to buy our Ricardo shop and like buy, you know, school uniforms. There are broader goals and aspirations that we have for ourselves as women. And one of the things that I quite often see among the Rainmaker community is that disconnect between what you're doing with your money and what the goals are. So quite often we'll say, right, well, you know, I'm on a good salary, I'm paying into a pension DAV, you know, I feel okay about that. Quite often we're talking about investing. You know, lots of people that come to me are coming because they want to learn about how to invest and start that journey. So I'm seeing lots of conversation about that. But then I think, you know, it's part of a system. To me, money management, it's not just investing over here and pensions over here. It's these are different parts of your, you know, kind of financial portfolio, your financial mix. And so what are some of the other things that you might be doing? What's the financial road mapping? What's the financial planning that could be happening that can move you from where you are today to where you want to get to? So it's recognizing, okay, well, am I constantly in the red at the end of the month? So yeah, I'm doing all of these amazing things. I'm putting money into my savings. I'm putting money into an investment pot, maybe. I'm putting money into my pension, but I'm finding myself in overdraft all the time. And I had a one-to-one client very recently with whom I had this very conversation. And when we looked at everything, it was like, okay, are you clear on what you're saving for? You know, of course, we've got your rainy day fund and everything else, but are you saving for a particular goal? Or is it just saving because you think that that's what you should be doing? If you are constantly finding yourself in overdraft, shouldn't some of those savings be rerouted over there so you're not paying fees and charges? So from my perspective, it's now recognizing that we've got all of these different things. You're kind of bolting on these or kind of plugging these gaps in our understanding about different financial instruments. And then saying, right, with this knowledge and understanding of pensions, of investing, I know how to budget. What does this look like for my overall system? And who am I sharing that system with? Are there other people that are involved in this? You know, should I be having this conversation with other members of my household? It might be a partner. It might be, you know, it might be in a house share. You know, are you pooling finances with anyone else? And how can you make sure that it runs as a well-oiled automated machine? We don't have time as women. We really don't have the time to be manually trying to move things around and be doing all that every day and every week.
Absolutely not. One thing I want to question you on is the word portfolio. So I'm going to be really honest with you. I don't have enough money for a portfolio, surely. Like if I've only got a couple of hundred pounds and I'm lucky to have that at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Is that enough to really be doing all this work on a on a budget, or am I being naive and everyone should be doing it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think you're being naive at all. And I think you're quite right to point out that piece of language, that vocabulary, because I think that's one of the things that can be quite daunting for people as well. The vocabulary can really make people feel like, you know, I have had my working career in an industry in which we're talking about assets and we're talking about leverage and we're talking about capital and all of these different terms that just roll off my tongue sometimes. And it's the Rainmaker community that are very good at saying, Dav, what is that? And calling me out. So that, you know, when we pride ourselves on communicating in plain English, then we have to make sure that it makes sense. So portfolio, you know, it's just like when you think about a portfolio career, really, you can use the same term across different things. And ultimately, it's you kind of, it's like a patchwork quilt, kind of piecing together different things to create something that really makes an impact. And when we think about our money, building an investment portfolio, all it means is you starting, you know, brick by brick to put some money away and to make sure that that money meets, you know, a number of criteria when it comes to investing. But they're very simple criteria that any of us can understand. Chief among them is diversification. Well, again, it's just not putting all your eggs in one basket, isn't it? It's thinking, well, how can I spread my risk? And risk is another thing that can really freak people out. So the more you delve into it. But I think picking off these terms one by one and saying, well, actually, I'm taking risk by having my money in a cash savings account. And your cash savings account is a part of your portfolio. Because your portfolio is just a basket that you're putting all of these different eggs into.
Yeah.
It's rebrand pensions.
Right. Yeah. But your pension will be part of your later life portfolio. And ultimately, it's just thinking about what are all of the things that I have in the mix that contribute towards my long-term financial security and help me to achieve some of the financial goals that I have for myself and life goals, because that's all money is about, helping you to achieve your life goals, whether it's having a family, moving abroad, writing a book, whatever it is, the money is a facilitator in doing that.
I think what I'm hearing is that actually the attitude that I had, that I think a lot of people have, of just kind of passively allowing money to flow in and out of your bank account, especially when you come back from mat leave, isn't going to empower you. You could probably survive doing it, right? And I have. I'm living proof that I'm surviving. It's very passive. I have no relationship with my money. And I don't think anyone that I know does, because we all are just trying to get by doing 10 loads of washing a week and nursery fees, etc. But this conversation is really about empowering people. That's what I'm getting, like empowering you to understand what pensions are and Toby's rebranding of that, empowering you to read these books, empowering you to learn more about investment. That's what I'm hearing, Dav. Like, actually, I always thought investment meant that people had tens of thousands of pounds, and also a portfolio was people with five houses, because that's a portfolio, right?
Of course.
And actually, everyone has a portfolio, no matter what. You've got £100 in two bank accounts, therefore you've got a portfolio of two, and that's enough. Like,
yeah. And also, I mean, you make an excellent point, which is that, and it's a good way for us to dispel one of the many misconceptions about investing, which is, you know, which include, you know, it's not for people like me, people that have come from a certain background, a certain ethnicity, a certain gender. Maybe you were raised in a working class home, and now, you know, you've got different career prospects than the family, your family members, your peer group. And that can feel quite strange for lots of us as women. You're just trying to fit in all of the time, and you're thinking, gosh, you know, I'm doing things differently, and I don't have anybody that's come before me that can advise me. I didn't grow up in a household in which we were talking about money around the dining room table. I don't have a financial advisor. How do I even get a financial advisor? So there are so many of these questions. But I think importantly, for anybody listening, you can start from as little as £25. I think, in fact, less for some of them. There are so many of those apps. Yeah. And I mean, I love them. I could talk about the apps all day. And what I love about them is how they've democratized, ugly word, but they've opened up access to a market that was previously closed. I've worked in the industry for such a long time. And at the start of my career, you know, unless you had millions and millions of pounds, I worked on the institutional side of the business anyway. So it was dealing with pension funds for big companies. But certainly for this, you know, for what they call retail investors, so, you know, us on this call, you know, the general public, you had to be earning a certain level of income and already have a certain volume of assets to even be considered. So, you know, if you're already not a millionaire, then you wouldn't even have access to the experts that are making people even more millions each and every day. Now we have an opportunity to say, right, I've got a pound, I've got 10 pounds, you know, and I can round up the spare change from my expenditure on my card, and that then will be invested. That is power. And I think, you know, again, to use Toby's language, taking the power in every situation and asserting ourselves is really important. So you should feel good about the fact that if you started from a standing start and you're doing £25 a month, that's amazing. That's a really big deal.
Yeah. Toby, before we started this call, actually, you and I were talking quite a lot about the emotional changes of coming back, going on mat leave, relying on other people for money, and that relationship change. And then even when you go back after mat leave and say you're on reduced hours and you've got less money, and that does feel less empowering. Like, you do feel like the things you could once afford. And do you know what? The payoff is that you have a beautiful baby who gives you more love and joy than I've ever experienced in my life. But equally, I would still really like to buy those Ganny boots that I've seen. Yes, right? So talk to me a bit more about your experience and what you've heard within the community, especially when you were doing research for your book, about the emotional changes of finances and money.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think I kind of went from being, you know, financially independent, but having a collective goal, which was what we wanted for our kind of relationship, and back then I was in quite a commission driven role, so I loved it because I love having a goal and a target and like smashing it and then being paid for it, like happy days. And then you kind of go on this power pause and I'm literally just not being paid for anything. So it's a really kind of hard relationship, and then that dynamic from never really having to ask for money for certain things. And now we're having to have a conversation about, right, I think, you know, this amount of money will take us up to this point. But after that point, I've literally got zero coming into my bank account. You know, what does that look like? And then we kind of went into decision to buy a house. And all of a sudden, I think this is where it actually probably really hit me. All of a sudden, I felt like I wasn't the equal contributor that I once was in terms of what I was putting into that deposit. And that was really, really annoying. So I thought, I've been to university, I've been to law school, like I've done all this stuff. And now all of a sudden I'm like, you know, we all count the pennies and the pounds to kind of get to a deposit for a mortgage. But I'm like, I'm really scratching the surface here. So it is a really hard thing to kind of meander and navigate. But I do think these conversations are actually just really important, because I don't want women listening to this to, who maybe feel a certain way, to kind of beat themselves up and feel like, oh, it's just me, it's just me. No, it's thousands of us that all feel this way. But like we say, like, I think this conversation actually is really empowering, and it's reminded me to kind of go back and look at certain things. There is a real power and then kind of earning again. Like, I loved it, that first paycheck that I got.
Oh, it's delicious, isn't it? Oh my god,
I was like, yes. Come on, I can maybe do my nails. Yeah, that, you know, that kind of taking the power back and then deciding, okay, right, what does it look like now that I have this salary? And actually, is it enough? Do I need to be having conversations? Do I need to be looking at, you know, side hustling is a whole another conversation in itself, but are there different things that maybe I want to be doing to supplement my income? Am I looking at childcare strategically? Are there different things? And just having the conversation. I remember having a conversation with my friend, and she's like, did you know you can do X with your childcare? I was like, what? Hang on. Why did I not know about that? So having those conversations also then unlocks hopefully further opportunities. But I think I just want to say that you're not alone if you feel that it's really challenging on the emotional side of things when you do have a baby and also kind of returning to work. Trust me, you are not alone.
Dav, do your community echo that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I was going to add to what Toby said is, and, you know, people can listen to this podcast and they probably see women who have profile and are purportedly doing amazing things. We look like we're doing amazing things. But the, in the midst of absolute chaos, I mean, Toby and I have both written a book.
Oh, 100%.
You know, Felicia, you'll be doing amazing things at work. You know, there's so many incredible women in the Rainmaker community. And, you know, we'll have these conversations and they'll say, oh, I've just done this, I've just done that. And they'll just say it in a really blasé way. And we have to remind one another of quite how incredible we are, because we watch women, particularly those, you know, that if we are coming back from maternity leave ourselves, we're watching the women that have come before us and we're like, gosh, they're so together.
Yes.
You know, Toby always looks so polished. She's always so beautiful. Yes. This is what I think in my mind, right? Toby's so beautiful. She's so polished. Yeah. I'm a hot mess. My hair is cocked to the side. Like, these children are getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
Why? Like, summer holiday chaos. It's terrible. And actually, we all, I bet if we were to open up and have these conversations, if I say to Toby, oh my God, like, how are you getting on with summer holidays? You posted something brilliant on your Instagram about finding your child, having scribbles in your notebook. That is, so many moms up and down the country can attest to that. Or like, where the hell is my work phone? Can't find my work phone. Yeah. And then you find it in the toy box. Oh. All of these ways that children attempt to sabotage us, and we prevail nonetheless. So I think we need to be open about reminding one another, we are still able to overcome so much. So the woman that you think is polished, guaranteed, if you had a conversation with her, sometimes she's polished because that's her armor. That's her way of being able to show up. You put your clothes on, you put your makeup on, and you feel so much better about yourself in lots of cases. That's really important.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that. There's a piece of training by a well-known tech brand, and it's called I Am Remarkable. And lots of people have done it. But as somebody who, you know, is on a platform talking about empowering and empowering women and empowering mums, and I'm quite used to kind of documenting my successes and things that I've done. Like, when I sat to do this training, it was rather embarrassing because it was on a video call with colleagues. When I sat to do this training, I found it really challenging. And I think that I wouldn't be alone in that experience. I found it really challenging to write the things down that I was remarkable at. even though there's like the factual things, but kind of really getting into the emotional side of what makes me as a person remarkable, like almost outside of my job and outside of those kind of black and white achievements. And we do, it's really hard, but we do need to find those moments to remind yourself why you as a holistic person, why you are remarkable. And that permeates into your, you know, your financial well-being, your physical and mental well-being. But I would definitely encourage people to try and, you know, bring it back to the root of, you know, I am remarkable, and therefore I can unlock these conversations, I can unlock these opportunities, and I can empower myself around my finances.
I love that.
Me too. It feels like a good place to have a power pause. So the last thing I really want us to talk about, and Dav, I suppose I'm asking you this from your expertise. All of the stuff we've spoken about today is big. It's a big topic. And there are things we can do now as women who have had maternity leaves, have come back to work, are having the discussion, are helping people hear what they might need. But how do we change it? How do we make sure that then maybe the next generation are faced with something different?
It's a brilliant question. And I think one of the things that I think we started this conversation with was thinking, actually, it's not all doom and gloom. There is so much that we can do as women to empower ourselves, even if the powers that be, you know, the institutions, policymakers, etc., are slow in making the changes that are required to improve conditions, improve pay conditions, you know, help us close the gender pensions gap and all of these other things. There is so much that we can do individually. And we've talked about some of those things here today, which is really important. But I think alongside us, you know, raising ourselves and raising, you know, our peers and making sure that we are empowering one another, we really need to be thinking about the next generation. You know, there was that study that was done by Cambridge University, I believe, in conjunction with someone else, that pointed to the fact that children form their earliest money habits by the age of 7. And I could go into like a whole thing about 7.
Crazy.
Imagine the 7-year-olds, you know. Imagine yourself at 7. I mean, when I was 7, my sister was just born. And I think to myself, gosh, I knew things about money, but I wouldn't have known. Yeah. And so if a psychologist came and was teasing out some of these things, you know, what conversations had I heard in the household? What habits was I already starting to form based on my experiences of being among the adults in my life? So against that backdrop, I guess for any of the moms or even dads listening, what impression are you leaving with the young people in your home about money? What conversations are they overhearing? What can you do to shift some of those things? Whatever the age, even if you've got children, of course, that are younger or older than 7, it's so important that we think about how we can practically influence their mindsets in a multitude of different things. I mean, as parents, we're influencing these future leaders in all of the ways already. So how can we influence their money habits? And so I wrote Cash is Queen exactly on this topic. We don't shy away from any of these things. Mm. You know, as I say, the target age group for that book was kind of 11 to 16-year-olds. So we're getting the next generation, kind of planting the seeds in their minds early and then helping them to recognize that it's important for them as young women, not just to have financial independence, but to know how to manage their money.
Absolutely.
To be leaders within their groups of friends around money and to feel confident having those conversations to earn their own money. It talks about pensions. And of course, it's a much better language than pension. I don't even think I mentioned the word pension, but I talked to them about their financial futures. What kinds of things might you want to do later in your life when you're not working? And so I think having those conversations, even if it's not you buying them a book or some other kind of resource, then just having those conversations. It might be opening them up, you know, a child-friendly bank account so they can manage their own pocket money. Whatever it is, being on top of that as early as we possibly can is a real power move.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I can attest to that. And it's so funny, as you were talking, I was like, actually, Davinia's in my book when we talk about money.
Yes.
So I love that. I love the collaboration that we've got here ongoing. But my niece, I bought the book for my niece who is 8, and absolutely, like, her mum was saying, go to bed, stop reading, because she couldn't stop poring over the pages. I think she just felt so empowered that actually there is something written for me to understand this big thing called money, which probably feels huge at that age. But it's like, actually, no, I can start to understand it for myself. I mean, she is a mini feminist, but she's like, I can understand this for myself, and absolutely loves your book. So I think the work that you've done is so important. It should be
Thank
in every
you.
School.
It should.
Every child.
It really should.
I feel like I might need to read it now. It might be my target age.
Well, Felicity, you know what? I've had so many rainmakers who've said to me, Dav, I bought it for my daughter or my goddaughter, but I had to buy them another copy because I read it myself. Like, it's just...
Love that.
But it's a beginner's guide. It's a beginner's guide.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that was just so interesting. I can't hear enough about money. And it's weird because I never want to talk about it. I'm one of those people that just doesn't feel very comfortable talking about it. So it's really pushing me out of my zone. But Dav is just so...
She's amazing, isn't she?
Incredible. I think if I had a key takeaway, I've actually got two. I can't pick just one this time. It's in a practical sense, if you're worried about money, to do a physical budget. And I know that helped me, but Davinia saying that that was a good thing is the validation that I needed. And I'm sure my husband will be thrilled to hear that as well. And then secondly, from you both, actually, I found it really empowering to hear you saying that we should be advocating for ourselves. And I think that's really, really easy to forget when you're in the midst of returning to work as a whole new person. Like, I had no idea who I was, and I would never have been able to advocate for myself. But if I'd heard someone just say it or seen someone just give me a nudge, then I think I might have written down those bullet points or that letter or opened the notes app in my phone and just, I don't know. So yeah, what's your key takeaway?
Gosh, it was so good. Dav is amazing. Yeah. She really, really knows her stuff. But for me, the key takeaway was that the language of money can be really intimidating. Mm. And it can sometimes put us off confronting those hard decisions or those conversations. But actually, when you break it down with amazing people like Dav, they're all words that we're all very familiar and really comfortable with. So we shouldn't allow the language to put us off from having those conversations and making those decisions that we need to, or embracing our finances, because it's all language that we all know and love. It just has annoyingly really fancy, overly complicated words.
Well, that's all for episode 9 of Baby on the Brain, The Returners. Special thank you to my co-host Toby and our guest Davinia. Next week, for the final episode of this series, I'm joined by Shakira Akabusi as my co-host. And our guest is Little Omo founder Desiree Ashamoide. You can tweet us at Stylist Magazine, find us on Instagram and use the hashtag StylistBabyOnTheBrain. Remember to subscribe, share, and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, which will help other mums returning to work looking for podcasts like this find us more easily.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.